The following program is created for informational purposes only and does not constitute as medical advice. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the host. If you think you may have a medical emergency, consult your doctor.
This is where the healing begins.
This is Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne of Greenwood Family Chiropractic, where it's not only about neck and back pain, but a place for whole body wellness. Listen this hour as Dr. Leanne is here to share her wellness education to help you live a maximized life. For more information, visit GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Good morning. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter with Greenwood Family Chiropractic. 317-893-2853. That's 317-893-2853. Or you can always reach out or schedule an appointment online. GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com. That's GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today we are talking about immune system. So we're talking about germs aren't the problem, the truth about immunity. Now, I will say this, that oftentimes we will talk about cold and flu season, right? Oh yeah, you know, it's just cold and flu season, just cold and flu season. And I'm like, what kind of season is that? Right? We look at spring and summer and we say, this is just health and wellness season. But I think we use the verbiage cold and flu season because people are often more sick. But here's my frustration that comes with this, is there's really no such thing as, quote, cold and flu season. When you pick your head up and figure out what have we done with ourselves and to ourselves for the last 3 to 4 months, right? Like look at 90 days. And here's what happens. We have the fall. And the end of October, we all know, comes Halloween, which we're probably not buying all of the candy the day before Halloween. So, you know, like a little pesky mouse gets into the bag and somebody ends up eating a couple things. And you're like, here's where it all starts. A couple little mini candy bars. And then there's like trick-or-treating. So then you have tons of candy. And then it's not like you go trick-or-treating and you have candy and then you're just done with it. So what happens is then you're munching on that over and over and over and over and over again until, you know, like we get to close to Thanksgiving and then we have a couple of the Thanksgivings, which then you have crackers with cheese balls and you have, you know, the sweet potatoes that are full of brown sugar and marshmallows and we've got the stuffing and all the white bread, which turns into sugar. And we'll talk about how sugar depletes the immune system. Right. And then you've got the pies and the cakes and the desserts and you maybe do that. And then you've got leftovers. Right. Then after that, then you have all the Christmas parties, holiday parties, where again, we have an increase of sugar, sodas, alcohols, not great on track food. And then by this point, we've gone a couple of months without seeing the sun. So we don't have any vitamin D. And so, you know, now we're also not getting out as much. So we're not exercising and we've got this compounding effect, but it's negative. So we can't figure out why all of these things are happening a little bit more and a little bit more every single time where we're now we're getting more sick and more sick and more sick. When you're really, it's not cold and flu season. It's I'm not taking care of my body. So now I'm getting sick more often season. Right. And we know why, but yet somehow, some way, you know, we just get to the point where it's like you're just not doing what is needed to take care of your body. And so that's just a little bit of what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about sugar and its immune suppression. I do want to talk about the difference between how the immune system actually works. So just the first responders, your adaptive immune system. I do want to talk about the difference between viruses and bacteria and why antibiotics are not going to work on everything and what happens if you take them when it's not needed. So I think just overall, we want that breakdown of figuring out kind of the behind the scenes of the immune system. But then obviously what we can do more naturally to be able to conquer that. So we will get started. But before we get into that, let's talk about some news.
Dr. Leanne's Health News.
Some studies suggest that too much sugar can literally mess with the brain.
Health News Now, one of the world's most commonly prescribed medications.
Today, the average American consumes 22 teaspoons of sugar a day.
Protesters say they just should not be forced to get this shot, not by the government.
For today's Health in the News, common vitamin in everyday foods may control speed of digestion. So this vitamin is linked to gut motility, which is the process that moves through food through the digestive system. So a common vitamin found in everyday food may play a role in how often people go to the bathroom, according to a large new study. So researchers found that evidence that vitamin B1, also known as thiamine, is linked to gut motility, which again is the process that moves food through the digestive system. So like a lack of motility or movement would be a reason, for example, for constipation, right? The international team analyzed genetic and health data for people more than 268,000 people in Europe and East Asia ancestry. Participants reported how frequently they went to the bathroom, which researchers used to add measure of gut motility. So they said, we used genetic to build a roadmap of biological pathways that set the gut's pace. What stood out was how strongly the data pointed to vitamin B1 metabolism alongside established mechanisms. This comes from Gastroenterology Genetic Labs, located in Spain. So B1, also known as thiamine, is linked to gut motility, which is the process that moves through the digestion. By scanning millions of genetic markers, the team identified 21 genetic regions tied to how often people had bowel movements, including several that had not previously been connected to digestive functions. Many of the signals pointed to pathways already known for important for digestion, like bile acid metabolism and nerve signaling. Weird. Nerve signaling. Why nerve signaling? Why is it that chiropractors, especially, you know, with infancy, but adults see it too, because it controls the rhythmic contractions of intestinal muscles. The most unexpected finding involving genes linked to thiamine metabolism, two genes in particular, which help to transport and regulate vitamins B1 in the body, showed a strong association with stool frequency. So to explore whether this translated into everyday behavior, the researchers examined dietary data from nearly 100,000 participants in the UK Biobank. They found that people who consumed higher amounts of B1 tended to have more frequent bowel movements. B1, and here's some of the reasons why, B1 plays a central role in energy metabolism and nerve function, including the nerves and muscles that coordinate movement in the gut. This is according to the NIH. The study was published in the scientific journal Gut. I think this is kind of interesting and something to touch base on too, is like, where do you find B1? Like, where are the highest foods in specifically B1? So some of the foods that you're looking at will be, you'll find brown rice, oatmeal, Brussels sprouts, salmon, navy beans, sesame seeds. We have, what else? Flax seeds, green peas, acorn squash, asparagus, and mussels. So there's a list of B1, which I think is awesome. Like, those are really clean, healthy foods. And you might say, oh my gosh, I hate fish. And you're like, okay, well then have more like navy beans and flax seeds and, you know, green peas and brown rice. Like, it doesn't have to be mussels and salmon, but just those foods that are high in B1 I think it's just important to get that GI tract moving. Now, once your GI tract is kind of off or maybe decimated, those are ones you do have to kind of look a little bit more. And that's where the GI stool effects will have a little bit more, you know, it's looking at a stool test. So it's literally from mouth to anus. It lets us see all of those things. But I think it's just one of those ones where you're like, oh, no. My child's constipated, or oh no, I'm constipated. You know, talking about, because slow motility would cause to lesser bowel movements, which would be slowed motility. And so adding in foods high in B1, you're like, those are foods made by God, versus finding something like Miralax, where it changes the osmotic gradient. So it basically pulls water outside of the intestines to help soften the stool. And you're like, but what if we just like drink more water and ate butter? Like, that's way, in my personal and professional opinion, that's something that I would choose all day, every day, making that lifestyle choice and not something that is going to end so poorly. And especially to like neurological dysfunctions that happen with when you're looking at something like a stool softener. So there's just that aspect that you're like, wow. And then two, nerve supply. I love the fact that they talked about nerve supply, because I explain all of the time the process of peristalsis, it's smooth muscle contraction. Well, like, of course, you have a process in your large intestines where your stool literally moves against gravity, it's your ascending large intestine. And they're like, how does it do that? And you say, the process called peristalsis. You know, so there's different ways that you can address things, but they should absolutely be addressed, especially when you look, and we were talking, I was talking to my team recently that cancer, years upon years, the top disease killer in the United States will oscillate between heart disease and cancer, heart disease and cancer, heart disease and cancer. Well, right now, as of recent, cancer has now become the number one leading cause of death in individuals under the age of 50. And that cancer is colorectal cancer. And they're finding it's because of ultra processed food. And you're like, I don't know if you know this, but all of the foods that I talked about, brown rice, navy beans, flax seeds, peas, mussels, acorn squash, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, sweet potatoes, macadamia nuts. Like, all of those things are not ultra processed foods. Those are really good, healthy foods. No one's saying cereal for breakfast, a Subway sandwich for lunch, and hamburger helpful for dinner. Those are ultra processed foods. So just adding back in real good whole nutrition has all sorts of advantageous aspects for your health. So now, when we talk more about health, that's what we're going to dive in deeper, talking about immune system and how it actually works next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. Hear full shows on the podcast link at freedom95.us. Here's Dr. Leanne.
I give it all back. I'm on my knees. Take what you want, cause that means nothing to me. I'd rather be broke. All these riches are cheap. Cause if I got you, then I got all that I need. All that I need.
Welcome back. You're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853. That's 317-893-2853. GreenwoodFamilyChiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Today we are talking about germs aren't the problem, the truth about immunity. I talk about it a lot, is that when we talk about cold and flu season, I'm like, no. Cold and flu season, every year, the same time, people assume getting sick is just inevitable. But here is something most people never stop to question. If germs were the real problem, everyone exposed would get sick. but that doesn't happen. So the example that I'll often give to people is, you know, if I'm to stand in a room and say I've got, you know, whatever, the flu, and I sneeze on you and I sneeze on the person next to you, you get the flu, the person next to you doesn't, but why? So, and I think that's one where like exposure doesn't equal outcome. The deciding factor inevitably is the immune system. So it's not luck or genes or, you know, whatever. It is not the germ, it's the host. And you are the host because you host that immune system and you are hosting that germ. So I think it's really important to break down how the immune system works, right? So there's two different kind of types when we're talking about. The immune system isn't one thing. It's coordinated. It's this intertwining. Years ago, I was trying to do this like immunity workshop and I found this video and it was animated, this animated video. And it was talking about how when you get exposed to a, you know, a pathogen, bacteria, virus, here's what happens. And I think I put the speed, like I sped it up a little bit, but it was like macrophages and this, and you've got that, and, you know, just your interleukins, it's like this. And it was one of those ones. And I only played a couple minutes of it and I just stopped. And I looked at everyone. I said, do you feel overwhelmed right now? And everyone was like, yes. And I was like, that's why you're tired when you get sick, because all of that is happening in your body and you don't ever have to tell your immune system to do anything. I am always, always just so impressed at how the body works, when in reality, we can know zero. You can know zero about your immune system, but that doesn't mean it's any gonna function better or worse. If I know like what the exact first responders were to a cut on my finger or a sprain on my ankle, that doesn't mean my body is going to do that any better than someone who has never even learned about it, you know? So I think it's just one that it never ceases to amaze me how awesome that is. So anyways, it's this intelligent system, and it's designed to recognize, respond, and remember. That's kind of important. So kind of your first responder is more of your innate immune system. So this is like inflammation, fevers, mucus, white blood cells, so like neutrophils, macrophages. This response happens fast, and they're not necessarily specific to one germ. So it's fun in the office. Sometimes I'll say, let's play a game. And I'll say, healthy or sick is the game. I said, you can't say any other words. You can't ask any other questions. I'm going to say a word and you say healthy or sick. Fever. You know, and the average person says sick. Said mucus. They'll say sick. I'll say vomiting and diarrhea. And they'll say sick. And I will say wrong to every single one. Because that is truly your body's, right? If you come into contact, the first thing that your body does is it increases the temperature, right? That's designed off. A fever itself is designed to help slow the replication. It slows the growth. And that fever calls on other white blood cells to come fight whatever pathogen foreign invader comes, right? Yet the first thing that we do when we see a virus or a bacteria, or like we see our temperature go up, the first thing that we do for ourselves or for our kids is that you'll do what? You're like, here, take this, get the fever down. It literally takes away your body's ability to slow, to stop, to kill whatever foreign invader is in your body. Same thing, mucus, right? They've got the mucinex and all of these things, and you're like, but mucus, why does our mucus thicken? And it's like to grab onto the crud to get it out. But yet we thin it all out and you're like, no, it's fine. Just let the crud stay in there forever. Same thing with like vomiting and diarrhea. Yeah, I'm sure my kids inevitably, you know, my kids are smaller. And I'm like, every time I say this, I'm like, they are going to make fun of me when they're older. You know how like you tease your parents and I'm like, oh, I feel like this is going to be on one of them. But I'm like, hey, your body's doing the right thing at the right time. You know, like So they're like vomiting. And I'm like, your body's really smart. You know, like, poor kids. It's fine. Right. But they're like, but it's true. Your body is actively trying to get rid of it. So when we take something to try to lessen our body's ability to get rid of it, well, then what happens when we decrease the fever, when we decrease the mucus, when we decrease the ejection fraction upward and downward? I mean, those are ones where it's like, yes, you're sick for longer because your body is like, hey, I've got this innate intelligence and I'm trying to do everything that I know to be healthy and strong and I'm doing the right thing. But you just keep giving me a chemical that tells me I'm wrong. And we're like, but why? And you're like, because it just makes them more comfortable. And honestly, for me, it's one where I'm like, I would rather be sick for a less amount of time, like hard, strong, fast, get it done with, than be sick for several days. So that's more of an innate immune system. Now, number two is more of your adaptive immune system. So this is your memory and precision system. So these think more of like your antibodies, your T cells, your long-term immunity. This system learns from exposure and can adapt over time. So symptoms are not signs of failure. They're signs of immune activity. So fevers increase immune efficiency. Mucus traps pathogens. Fatigue redirects energies to healing. Suppressing symptoms without supporting those systems underneath often delay recovery. So that is often one too when you think about like memory. And I thought about this as a kid, and I think it's interesting that I thought about this as a kid. So like if I get the flu, I like brush my teeth. But why don't I, if I'm brushing my teeth, right? Like I wouldn't, if I'm actively in the flu, like I keep re-exposing myself, right? Then why wouldn't I just have the flu forever? And it's one where it's like, you might be like, well, you're supposed to change your toothbrush. That's not what I'm talking about. Yes, change your toothbrush after you get sick, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I'm saying like, why do I not keep like, if I give it to my spouse, and how come my spouse doesn't give it back to me and I give it back to my spouse? Like, why don't we just have the flu forever? And I remember kind of thinking about that as a kid, and that's where more of those antibodies come in. Same thing with like, for example, you know, there's viruses that morph and there's viruses that don't really morph. So let me give you the example of like the flu versus the chicken pox. You know, oftentimes they'll say, well, you can't get, or like mononucleosis, right? The Epstein-Barr virus. I actually did get that twice, but I think I had such a mild case the first time. My body didn't build up the antibodies to that the way that it should. Because they told me, you can't have mono twice. And then they swapped me and they were like, girl, you got mono twice. And I was like, yeah, let's just trying to prove people wrong here with my health. So, but that's one where chicken pox, right? You get exposed. Like I had chicken pox as a kid, natural chicken pox, you know, when you were a kid back then, we did like chicken pox parties, very frowned upon now. We did. So it was just like, everyone just knock out the chicken pox at once. It was the first day of summer after my first grade. I will never forget, because that's the day that all you want to do is play outside. And I was inside with like duct tape mitts on in a oatmeal bath. So those are ones where it's like, well, I've had the chicken pox. I'm not going to get it again because that that virus doesn't mutate. And so say my kids were to have the chicken pox, I would not typically get those again. But if anything, it actually builds a stronger immune system because it's a re-exposure. But those are ones like once you have those antibodies. Now, the difference is when you kind of look at the flu. When you look at the flu, those are always kind of shifting and changing, which is why there's multiple flus during seasons. That's why, you know, the flu vaccine efficacy is less than 15 to 20% every single year with the introduction of terrible heavy metal. That's not the show today, but it is very true that you're looking at from just like a sheer aspect that they are always, they're mutagenic. They change. So they can change through the season. So, you know, now like when you look at the spring, they're going to be trying to guess how that virus is going to mutate so it can make, you know, hundreds of millions of doses of the flu vaccine When in reality, that's why, is because their guessing game stinks. No matter how good science gets, this is like viral intelligence, and you can't like do AI or science to really nail down in an accurate way what that's going to look like. That's why you can get the flu more than once in a season. That's why you can get the flu every single year, because those viruses are designed to shift and change. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne. I think the other thing that we need to address too when we're talking about virus versus bacteria is what is frustrating to me as a clinician is that we often just try to treat anything that shows up as a fever or discomfort with an antibiotic. But there is a difference between viruses and bacteria. So I think that's one of the biggest misunderstandings in healthcare generally. So bacteria is typically like an independent organism. It can live and reproduce on their own. And antibiotics can work when appropriately. There's gram-positive, there's gram-negative bacteria. So there's different types of bacteria. Some bacteria are more resistant to other strands of antibiotics. But I think the big aspect is I do feel like there's a time and a place for antibiotics. So I don't want it to sound like I'm totally against antibiotics. But that's when I do very much feel like they are overprescribed. Very much. Because anything that we see walking, here's a perfect example. There was two examples of antibiotics. One I believe properly prescribed, one that I believe may not have been. I had a patient who came in and she was kind of limping a little bit. And I'm like, why are you limping? And she was like, gosh, I've got this cut on my leg and it just hurts so bad. They were in Florida. They were swimming on the beach. And like there was just some like rocks that they were like coral rocks or whatever. And scratched her knee. I'm like, let me look at it real quick. And it was red and like a little bit swollen, but there was a red streak that went all the way up her leg. And if you know what that red streak is that is an infection that now has turned systemic. And I said, you need to go to the emergency room now. She said, I kind of have a busy afternoon. And I said, you won't if you're dead. You should go to the emergency room now, because you need like IV antibiotics, not even oral stuff. Like you need to put it directly in your veins now, because this will turn sepsic. And then those like organ system malfunction, like it's a big deal. And you know, those are ones where you're like, oh my goodness, I am so grateful for what we have when we need it. But then too, I see a baby who comes into my office who, you know, is on their third round of antibiotics for the last 14 days for an ear infection. And I was like, well, you know, at 14, 15 days, third, because, you know, the mom 3 or 4 days in is like still is crying, still has a fever, still has this. So they're like, oh, we just need a stronger antibiotic and then a stronger antibiotic. And I'm like, it's like 70% viral for pediatric ear infections. So the problem is that antibiotics don't work for viral infections. But oftentimes, if you don't swab, like just like strep throat, it could be bacterial or it could be viral. But you can have different types of infections. Viruses are not living organisms. They will hijack and invade your cells, and antibiotics do nothing to viruses, which is why you say you have mononucleosis, or say you have, also known as mono, or say you have the flu, or say you have the chicken pox. Those are all viral in nature. So antibiotics do nothing. And those are ones where like clearly you'll see the chicken pox and your doctor should know they will do nothing. Clearly with mono, that's a swab that you can figure out. Antibiotics will do nothing. It's just time in supporting the immune system. But when we say, oh, it won't hurt, that is 1,000% not true. And here's why that matters. Antibiotic disrupts gut microbiome. It kills off this beautiful ecosystem that we have in our GI system in terms of health and wellness. Your immune system sits in there. So many of your neurotransmitters, so like your brain health. So when people feel depressed, a lot of that starts and stems in the gut. 70 to 80% of immune system is connected to gut function. the big aspect too is that antibiotics can increase the risk of antibiotic resistance. So when you do need that, your body will not be able to respond. So we need this like giant bomb the city approach of the worst things ever for an antibiotic for a bacteria that might not be that bad. It's but because you kept taking it, your system's like, oh, I know it. I know how to fight it. Oh, I'd see that again. I know how to fight it. Oh, I see that again. I know how to fight it. And so those antibiotics don't work great. A couple other aspects, typically antibiotics taken before 2 years of age will often see a massive increase in asthma. But then two, the more that you do it, it increases yeast overgrowth and immune dysregulation. So antibiotics it's not like they just don't help, but they can actively weaken immune resilience long term. And so this isn't just my like crunchy chiropractic, like this is very much recognized by the CDC, the World Health Organization. Like it's a global health issue. And I remember asking the patients I was talking to a pediatrician and I said, why is it that the prescription rate's so high for kids and antibiotics? And they say we get pushed into a corner because mom or dad comes in and they're like, you have to do something. They want that something has to be tangible in their arms or in their hands, right? And that tangible is typically an antibiotic. So if mom or dad says, nope, I want to leave with an antibiotic, and they say, well, it's pretty sure it's just viral, just go home, then they'll say, we'll just go to someone else and they'll give us an antibiotic. So it's basically like they just keep business by giving the antibiotic, even though they acknowledge that doesn't need to happen. So just a lot to untake with that, but it's just one where inevitably there is a very large myth of cold and flu season. But I want to talk about individual things that you may be doing to suppress your immune system, but more importantly, evidence-based support on how to continue to keep boosting that immune system naturally next.
You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. We're online with life-changing results and success stories at greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. You're listening to Maximize Your Life with Dr. Leanne. Hear full shows on the podcast link at freedom95.us. Here's Dr. Leanne.
Today, we are talking about immune system, how germs are not the problem, but I'm going to give you some good advice about immune cell fuel. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Maximize Your Life. I'm Dr. Leanne Schluter, Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853, 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com. to schedule your initial exam and consultation. We just finished up talking about bacteria versus virus, the problems with antibiotics when it is not a bacterial infection. But what I want to touch on more now is, how do we support the immune system? We are pretty clear that supporting the immune system isn't necessarily about like one magic pill. But I do feel like it's about specifically giving the body what it needs to do its job. If we say it's not the germ, like germs don't get you sick, a poor immune system gets you sick. What can we do to fuel immune cells, right? Like, how do we strengthen up those immune cells the best we possibly can? And I will start with this, is that you have to cut out sugar and things that turn into sugar. I know that you probably would know this, but you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I don't feel good. I have a bellyache. And you're like, here's some Sprite. And you're like, I don't feel good. And it's just like, you know, just not healthy stuff. So there was actually a study that was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition that demonstrated that consuming sugar reduces white blood cell function for up to 4 hours after ingestion. So that means if you're reducing, white blood cells are a conglomerate of different type of immune system cells that are designed to help fight and kill infection, albeit viral or bacterial. So what happens is, and you know, it's, and this isn't just one where you're like, I'm not eating candy bars when I'm sick. One of the sources of sugar that they looked at was orange juice, specifically orange juice. So it's like, oh my gosh, we're sick. And you're like, oh, I'm doing orange juice for vitamin C. And you're like, well, it's not really great vitamin C, and you have to have, you know, a gallon of it to get what you need to help fight the immune system. But really what that means is that you have a reduced ability to kill bacteria and viruses. But then you stack that on top of like breakfast pastries, sweetened coffee drinks, snacks, desserts. And then the immune system spending most of its day just suppressed, because you're not just doing it at breakfast with orange juice. It's through the day. And so that's when you hear people are like, I always get sick this time of year. And you're like, so they're describing more of what's like a seasonal pattern of immune system suppression. This is not a seasonal virus. So you have to look. So number one, right? Stop eating so much sugar. 4 hours of suppression. That is not a little bit. Number two, we are going to prioritize whole foods to help reduce immune system stress, but then inflammation as well. Like protein is essential for immune cell production. We want to be able to support that as much as possible. Water, hydration. I see this so much this time of year because we don't think about carrying around water as much when it's cold. And it's not hot, we're not sweating, and we're like bundled up. And I will say one of the things that I try to focus in on a little bit more through the times in which it's cold is that I'm like, if I don't really want a bunch of cold water, then you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to drink warm water. So I've got loose leaf tea that I'll seep, some herbal loose leaf tea. And I think that's just, I don't do that for every ounce of fluid that I have throughout the day. But if I fill up like a thermos of, you know, some warm tea, and sometimes that just like warms up my soul a little bit. So I think just all of that, you know, so there's different ways, but it's so important. Hydration helps support circulation, detoxification. Now, here are the other couple things. CD and zinc. Those are my go-tos. It's changed a little bit over the course of the last couple years because now I have the opportunity ability. I still do oral vitamins, but I do go to Prime IV to be able, like I went just a day or two ago because, you know, there's talked to a lot of people traveling recently. So inevitably it's one where I'm like, well, I want to support my immune system. Now, vitamin D is one. Vitamin D plays a direct role in immune regulation. Best form of vitamin D is the sun. Like full exposure, 80% of your skin exposed for 20 to 30 minutes a day would produce an adequate amount of vitamin D. But say you are a Hoosier or you live in the Midwest and you are in the middle of winter, you will likely not have seen that, which means if you're not orally supplementing, then you are likely deficient. So those are ones where people are like, I don't want a supplement. And you're like, well, you can get a vitamin D lamp, but they are quite costly. And then two, no, I have one. I didn't realize, you know, they're almost like tanning bed lights. So I threw the kids in front of it and they got like a little bit of a sunburn because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't read the directions, but I've learned. But they actually looked at, for example, and this was huge during COVID, a very large meta-analysis published in BMJ showed vitamin D deficiency reduced respiratory infections. I'm sorry, it was a vitamin D deficiency supplementation reduced respiratory infection. So actually supplementing, orally taking it, reduced respiratory. So a deficiency in it increased respiratory infections. But again, vitamin C, zinc. Zinc was, again, huge with COVID, which I thought was very, very interesting because specifically zinc helps with denaturing viral RNA. So it inhibits the replication inside of the cells. Zinc. Now, so deficiency impairs both innate and adaptive immunity. Zinc works best when it's taken early. This is not something that you would necessarily take all the time because what happens is long-term use, overuse can interfere with copper balance. So, but you know, like one of the main sources of zinc is oysters. And again, living in the Midwest, there's not like a very high oyster consumption that we have. So it is one that a zinc deficiency can increase infection risk. I could not keep zinc on my shelf during COVID just because of all the research with it. And again, vitamin C, right? Vitamin C is concentrated inside what white blood cells, so it's required for neutrophilic function. Neutrophils help kill bacterial infections, phagocytosis, phagocytosis, whatever you want to say. Those kill pathogens in antioxidant protection during infection. So again, meta-analysis posted in Nutrients in 2017 found vitamin C reduces duration of cold and the severity. But that's typically one where 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, like, oh, the ultra, not, what is it called? Emergency. Those are ones where it's not necessarily like just, it's just not enough. It's not enough. And that's one of the reasons why I like Prime IV, that it just, it'll get you several thousand, bypasses the GI system so that you do a little bit better. But we've got a buffered one in the office that has multiple forms of vitamin C. They've actually done research on how it increases natural killer cells. So if you're like, I'm not doing the IV, you don't have to be a patient to come into the office and pick up supplements. You just have to stop in during open hours and say, hi, my name is, you fill in the blank, I would like to get some stuff that'll help with my immune system. And my very, very knowledgeable team will be able to help you with that. So I think just generally making sure you're getting enough sleep as well. Less than 7 hours a night increases the risk of infection after viral exposure. So sleep helps support antibody production, immune system formation, and memory. So it's time after time after time that you're like, hi, what can I do to help support the immune system? And you're like, sugar suppresses the immune system for up to 4 hours. Oh, and then this is another one too. I can't believe I would forget this. As a chiropractor, you know, people are like, I don't know, I don't really feel good. And I might come in and get adjusted. And they're like, seriously? And I'm like, yes, absolutely. Because there is correlation between chiropractic and immune function. So chiropractic doesn't necessarily treat bacteria or viruses. What it does do is support the nervous system, which directly relates to immune system function. They did do a research about white blood cell function, and they looked at 15, 30, and 45 minutes post-adjustment. So they basically gave someone a sham, they took blood, gave someone a sham adjustment, did labs 15, 30, 45 minutes after. They took a patient, took blood, gave them a real adjustment, and then did blood 15, 30, and 45 minutes after. And what they found on the individuals who got a real adjustment is there was anywhere from a 100 to 200% boost in those white blood cells, which is something that you want, right? You want slightly more blood cells, white blood cells, because that's part of what helps fight that infection. So again, we don't necessarily treat illness in our office, right? You're not going to come in and be like, okay, we're going to treat your bacteria or virus. But oftentimes when there's like a kiddo that's under the weather, or mom and dad who's like, I don't know, I'm just kind of body achy and I feel feverish, like I'll follow up the next day and they'll be like, I feel like a completely different person. And that's the reason why it's self-supporting the nervous system balance, but then that immune system white blood cells. So I think those are ones, it's far beyond just headaches, neck pain, and back pain. When you look at what we do at Greenwood Family Chiropractic in terms of supporting the immune system and bringing patients back to wellness, right? Our goal is inevitably to keep you well. And there is a time and a place for medicine, but those are ones where it's like, well, what if we start more conservatively and then figure out what we need to do? Because there, again, there is times where we've said, there's a patient, there's actually a couple patients recently we've had to refer out. There was one who was just, one of my doctors looked at him and was like, I think you need to go to the emergency room. And they did. They found that he had congestive heart failure because the swelling that he had, our doctors pinpointed. Another one, we thought it was a systemic infection, and we went and it was. And she's actually hospitalized for days after that. So those are ones where it's like, no, our weekend, we don't have a weekend degree for chiropractic. Like, it's 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of grad school, 4 parts of board accreditation, right? Carrying a chiropractic license, malpractice insurance, CEUs. Like, it is one that we don't prescribe. I don't want to prescribe. I don't want to. I want to figure out how we can make the body. Appreciate it when it's needed and have the ability to find out when that is and what we need to do, but just generally what we do to keep people well. So Greenwood Family Chiropractic, 317-893-2853. 317-893-2853, greenwoodfamilychiropractic.com to schedule your initial exam and consultation. Look forward to next week, but always remember that your power is on.